Aloha, party people. You are listening to Inside the Desert Oasis Room, episode number 151. This episode is sponsored by Tandawai Rum, the world's largest rum producer and winner of over 170 international medals in the past four decades. Check out their webpage at tandawaiusa.com or follow them on Facebook or Instagram at tandawaiusa. This episode is part two of our visit to the second annual OCUSBG Tiki Night at Tiki Farm. On this episode, we are joined by the Mai Tai Mafia and listen in on their club presentation of what makes up this fun and unique collaboration. With Nathan Hazard from Real McCoy Rum, Alexander Shane from Combier USA, and Joe Carlin from Liquid Alchemist. As always, I hope you enjoy this episode as much as we did bringing it to you. If you enjoy this podcast, please give us a good rating. Doing so helps people find the show and boosts our presence. Also, subscribing makes it easier for you to follow our adventures, and subscribers always get new releases first. You can find previous episodes at our website, desertoasisroom.com, as well as links to our social media, along with links to our guests' websites and their social media. And if you'd like to leave us a tip, click on the tip jar. Alrighty, let's get into this. We're back live from Tiki Farm for the second annual OCUSBG Tiki Meeting with the boys from the Mai Tai Mafia.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to get our tasting and seminar portion underway. I have a cousin, okay? And my cousin, he owns a cement shoe factory. Let me introduce you to my cousin, Joe. Joe is going to introduce you to the rest of his Mai Tai family.
Hey, how you doing? How are you guys doing tonight? I'm Joey Bones. Some of you may know me, some of you don't. This is my associate, Nasty Nate, over here. I got Randy the Wrench. And I got Big Al, the French Connection, in the back doing something over there. So Mai Tai Mafia originally started out... Excuse me. So Mai Tai Mafia originally started out with this gentleman right here, the AKA the French Connection. He brought it together with our dead man, George. Georgie got whacked, unfortunately. Denison Rum's no longer part of the Mafia. Sorry about that. We also had another old Jacques company we won't name, and we whacked them off too. So anyways, Mai Tai Mafia started out as just trying to present the best Mai Tais we ever could. For the longest time, you always had shitty rum runners, you had grenadine, OJ, pineapple juice. Forget about that shit, okay? So what I'm talking about is the real deal here. The real McCoy rum. I'm talking about real orange curacao here. I'm talking about orgeat. That's not white. What is white orgeat? You feel me? Typically, I'd have meatballs here for you today, but unfortunately, we had some Hawaiian food, you know, tiki things going on. But let's go ahead and bring this right in, okay? So I'm going to introduce you guys to Nasty Nate with Real McCoy Rum. Thank you, guys.
Wow. Wow. I can't stay in character like that, so I'm honestly not going to try. For the photo, okay. Yeah, can't do the voice. We're the Mai Tai Mafia. It has gone through some different iterations over the last 3 years. But here we are. We're really happy with this little brand family that we've fostered, and it's been cool to watch people really like positively respond to Mai Tai Mafia. They just kind of think it's really fun, kind of different. Art Beyond the Glass, which is a great charity event in Los Angeles, we kind of converted a corner of this building into a red sauce Italian restaurant and bar, like a little mob joint, and a lot of people told us it was like their favorite thing of the event, which we were really excited about. But it's really just, I think, something that we're always thinking about as in the industry is like, how can we engage in different ways and get people talking and thinking a little bit differently? So I think that's the whole idea of Mai Tai Mafia. It's a really simple idea, but it's let's just be engaging in a slightly different way than just the average bear. On that note, though, we're going to kind of go into a little bit brand education, because we're all here. We would love to talk to you a little bit about what we are, who we are, what we do, who we represent. And why we're so passionate about what we do, that we even make the time for these kinds of activities like Mai Tai Mafia. I am Nathan Hazard. I'm the brand ambassador for Real McCoy Rum. I represent all of the West, so if you don't see me as much as some of your other ambassadors, I am deeply apologetic. I wish I could be everywhere all the time, but I do live in Los Angeles, so I'm pretty close. And I of course, love my so-called family most of all. Real McCoy, is there anyone here who hasn't had Real McCoy, just out of curiosity, or isn't familiar? Hands? Yeah, me? I don't know. Okay. Oh, well, that's good, actually. Hey. Everything's great. Yeah, I'm doing a good job. Real McCoy, some fun things about Real McCoy. So we are made at Foursquare Distillery in Barbados. We are actually, Foursquare is the last family-owned distillery on the island where rum was born. And I think that's a really, really like impactful statement that it's kind of crazy. I mean, at one point in time, there were 75 plus distilleries on the island of Barbados. There are now four. Only three of them export. And again, Foursquare is the last one that is owned by a Barbadian that is upholding kind of the traditional style of Barbados rum making. Not the only, but the last family owned. So Richard Seal, our distiller, he's a very decorated distiller, very outspoken distiller, if you do follow the rum game, almost to a comical degree, as cracked by Joey over here. But I think rightfully so. He's just really protecting the provenance of authentic Caribbean rum. And we'll get more into that a little bit later. But Real McCoy, what we are is we're kind of the volume play coming out of this distillery. So you have this like award-winning distillery. And then our founder came together with Richard Seal, our distiller, and said, you know, I kind of want to take this to the next level. I want to work with you on being kind of a volume play, something that bartenders can use in cocktails, something that consumers can afford on the shelf, and really bring this idea of real rum home and really show people what authentic Caribbean rum is. Our inspiration for our brand is Bill McCoy, the Real McCoy. We all know that term. We've heard it a million times. We know it means the real deal, but a lot of people don't know why. Some people ask me if it's like, oh, is it the Hatfields and the McCoys? What is it? Well, it's actually Bill McCoy. It's this guy. He was the first rum runner during Prohibition. So January of 1920, Prohibition goes into effect. Bill McCoy, he was a retired shipbuilder, got on his boat, went down to the Caribbean, and this time started putting barrels on his boat for obvious reason. Can't get that stuff back home. So he returned to New York with a full boat of rum, and instead of pulling into harbor, he dropped his anchor 3 miles out in what was then international waters. Set up a little floating liquor store. He figured, why not? Told some boats passing by, hey, tell your friends, I got rum, whatever they need, just tell them to come out here. So 3 miles out, first night, all these people rowed up. Pretty incredible. And it was like he was an instant celebrity, because if you were buying from the mob at that time, or bootleggers, or anyone in the city, you were buying something that was stretched, and it was cut with anything from turpentine, wood alcohol, prune juice, you name it, garbage. It's where rot gut moonshine or swill, all these terms were born, because it was just garbage. So what Bill was selling was the real deal. The real McCoy as a term came from that time. It was street slang. Don't buy from the mob. Sorry, guys. go get the real McCoy. So that's really where that all came in. So this is Bailey, and this is our founder, and then this is our distiller. Bailey was making this film for PBS about Bill, fell in love with this story, just figured this guy's pretty legit. He's really upholding all these ideals that I think are super cool. And looking at the rum game today, he was like, I feel like it's similar to Prohibition as far as the mystery of what we're consuming. As we all know, young consumers today are super interested in the quality, the provenance of what they're going to put their money towards. It's really interesting, right? We're even probably feeling a little bit that the younger consumers are just buying less alcohol, consuming less alcohol, and they're being really, really precious about it. And so, we kind of, I think, got in at the right time as far as focusing on that. Like, let's be transparent. Our label has a ton of information on it. We're just really all about real rum, We don't add any sugars, flavors, any of that stuff. It's just real rum made on like really great old stills and just done the right way. And Richard, fourth generation in the business, he's really an interesting character. And he just won Rum Producer of the Year for the fourth year in a row at the International Spirit Challenge, which is pretty cool. Last year he won Supreme Champion, which means Best in Show. That's the first time in history that rum has won Best Spirit in the World at an International Spirit Challenge. Pretty exciting stuff. We're finally seeing rum get the attention it deserves. We're seeing premium rum skyrocketing, which is really exciting too. And a lot of people ask me, and actually someone even did earlier tonight, well, what makes Rue McCoy special? A lot of things. I mean, so this is a picture of Foursquare. We're an old sugar plantation and a refinery turned distillery. So we have a ton of cane. You can see on both sides of the road there and all around the property is all cane. We don't refine sugar or molasses at our facility any longer. There's one central refinery on the island, but we do use our own cane on site. We also, Barbados water is a really beautiful thing. Barbados is an island made of coral. So all of that beautiful limestone is filtering our water, and the aquifers in the center of the island have some of the purest, most beautiful water in the world. So that's something very nice that we're using in all aspects of our process. Our fermenters are closed-topped, and that's good for a couple of reasons. In Barbados, we really control the flavor of our fermentation, and we have some three-year going out right now, so as you, that's what you have in your hand, and please sample. What's interesting about our closed-top fermentation is that we have a very clean profile. We're not letting kind of foul congeners from the environment come in. It's very controlled. On top of that, we're a no-waste distillery. So in fact, even those cups that your rum is in right now, that's made from bagasse. I'm good. That is actually recycled sugar cane that is made into a plastic-looking cup that you're consuming there. At our distillery, though, our close-top fermenters, we collect all that CO2 and off-gassing. We pump that, wash it, pump it into water. We make soda pop from our fermentation gases. So there's actually a soda plant right in the middle of our fermenting room at the distillery. It's only one of many ways in which we use everything. All of our solids, our fuel and feed, all of our liquids get pH balanced and go back out to kind of to irrigate the fields. And then our stills right here, those are a picture of our two stills. That's a 1,260-liter copper pot still, one of only a handful in the entire Caribbean that is still producing regularly to this day. And then that's our coffee still, which is the earliest form of twin column still. And then we have about five giant-ass rickhouses aging all of our stuff. It's Caribbean aging, yo. So it is, open-air rickhouses. We don't have to move anything around. But it's about 80 degrees every day of the year in Barbados. And that's something really interesting to keep in mind. Very, very humid. So we lose 7 to 8% every year to Angel Share. Think about that. Like 1 to 2% Scotland, 3 to 4% Kentucky. We're losing 7 to 8% every year. And with one thing you should know about Rue McCoy, all of our age statements are true. So that 12-year year that you're going to have in a couple minutes, that is 100% 12-year juice. We don't add any sugars, flavors, etc. So, did everyone get a chance to taste that 3-year?
So what
you have here is, it's incredibly smooth. We don't really believe in silver, gold, dark with Rue McCoy. I mean, that's kind of a construct that is a little more modern, really, in the scape of rum. What we have is aged rum from Barbados, from molasses. You know, that's really, those are the distinctions. Of course, you'll notice looking at our lineup, though, it's kind of like, oh, it's kind of a silver, it's kind of a gold, it's kind of a dark. But that's, it's really just targeting those avenues, but introducing this real rum aspect. Like, this is just rum. But yes, please use it in your mojito and your daiquiri. Please use it in your tiki drinks. Please use it in your stirred whiskey-like drinks. You know, that's obviously kind of our focus, but using these different forms of existing Barbados traditional rum. So the 3-year you have, it's clear-ish. You can kind of see it's a little straw-colored, and that's because we pass it through charcoal once. So this is aged 3 full years. That pass through charcoal just takes out some of those colors, but what's nice about it, in my opinion, it's pulling out some of those wood tannins and linens that are giving it, you know, that usually would give barrel-aged product that really woody flavor. It's taking that out. And what you're getting is a beautiful clear, and you're getting the 5-year next, so you can kind of compare if you still have both. With the 3-year, though, you're getting a really nice clear expression of our fermentation. So you're tasting those nice fruity notes, those kind of dry sugar notes that are coming from the molasses wine. And that's just really showing you what that fermentation. I mean, if you think about distilled spirits, most of what you're tasting is that fermentation. What you do to it after that point can change the flavor, but if you're making a nice, clean, pure spirit, you're really tasting whatever you are, whatever that sugar is that you're fermenting in the first place. And in this case, it's molasses. Now, does everyone have a 5-year at this point, kind of? Now, see how different that is? Like, this is so much more about that barrel, right? That richness, the caramelization, a little bit of those bitterwood notes. This is very, very classic Barbados. And in fact, the point of this particular blend of pot still and column still, this amount of age, this is the whole focus of this was 1920s Barbados in a bottle. And that was the concept. So it's a little more pot still than some of the rums you're getting now out of Barbados in this particular blend, but that was to really kind of be a time capsule. And this is also very generally traditional for the island, this profile here. This is our flagship rum. We're super proud of it. I like it for bars because it's so versatile. This is a workhorse. You can use this for daiquiris. You can also use this for old fashions. You can use it for tiki. You can use it for highballs, mules, what have you. You can sip it neat, obviously. It's incredibly smooth. So this is my personal favorite. I love the 5. And then we'll get the 12-year coming out as well in a couple of minutes here. And again, just the big thing about that is the big jump in age, showing that tropical aging, showing what aging 12 full years in that climate can really do. So that's kind of like, this is like, oh yeah, question first.
How would you compare, say, 5 years or 12 years of tropical aging to 5 to 12 years?
Right. Well, and the good way to look at it is just the mathematics, right? Like I said, 1 to 2% evaporation in Scotland, because you have seasons, you have a more intense temperature change. You're not getting as much contraction of that barrel and evaporation, and with that contraction comes the flavor development. It's as that liquid goes in and out of the wood, that's where you're getting those flavor development, right? So if you only have 1 to 2% evaporation, you're having less action, less flavor. If you're having 3 to 4% Kentucky, a little less action, a little less flavor. If you're in the tropics and it's just hot and humid every day of the year, because there, I will take one of those. I like them all, I really do, but sounds good right now. It's just a whole different thing. And so this really drinks older than 12 years. This drinks more like a 20-year scotch. You don't see anything 20 years old out of Barbados for the most part, because there would be nothing left. It would just be so expensive to make that. And yeah, you can top off bottles and it's physically possible, but you're losing almost all of it by the time you get there. Even with our 12-year, we're losing, if you do that math, we're losing a majority of our juice in the making of this bottle.
So is there no blending involved at all?
The blending is only from the 2 stills. It is not ages. All of the ages are 100% true. So that's 100% 12-year juice in this glass you just got. Yeah, so we are all aged in ex-bourbon barrels, or we were just talking about, it's Jack Daniel's barrels. But I was told that if it's before it's filtered, it's not necessarily Tennessee whiskey, it could be called bourbon. So yeah, here we go. Ex-bourbon, but yeah, ex-Jack Daniel's barrels. For this core lineup, all 3 of those are used in those barrels. Char, it's about a medium char. You can tell, it's not like super intense, but. I do not believe we rechar them, no. But we did just build a rick house, and now we're going to be doing some of our own barrel treatment moving forward, which is going to be really fun. We actually just did a virgin barrel last year as our limited edition. So every year we do a limited, and we just did a 10-year virgin oak, which was super special, kind of treating it like a whiskey going into the barrel itself. And that had a really beautiful, beautiful flavor, yeah. Yeah. Keep, I love this. Nerding out.
What's your barrel entry?
You're really catching me. It just goes in still proof directly into the barrels, and then we. I would have to check a note on that one. Yeah, I'm sorry, man. Yeah. No. It's after. It's diluted to bottle. Yeah. Yeah, so we actually, as I just mentioned, our last limited edition, our new one just launched. So we have a 14-year. So Foursquare had never released anything older than 12 years before because of the things we were just talking about, just logistics. But Richard did find some older barrels, and so we released its 14-year. And what's cool about this, it's 14 years in the ex-bourbon, and then it's 14 years in Madeira casks. And now that's really common in Barbados because Madeira was often the last stop before people crossed the Atlantic down to the Caribbean. So boats would often arrive with either full or empty barrels of Madeira, and it was very common to age in those barrels. So we did one that has that combined with the whiskey. So it's kind of the prohibition thing that we've been doing, along with something very traditional for the island, married together in this new limited, and it is super sexy. I'm so sorry I don't have any right now. But it's very good. And talk to me. My cards are over there, over here, over here. I have lots of cards. Hit me up. I'd love to come visit with you, and I can taste you on the 14 because it's really special. And that is at 92 proof. It's a little bit higher proof, too, than what you're trying. Any other questions? You guys are great. I like these. I like when people have something to ask. That's good. Well, thank you. That's my little Cliff's Notes version of what I do. What's that? as I said, I'd love to meet you all personally and come visit you at your places of work and kind of continue the conversation. One last thing I'll mention is Guardians of Rum. If you're really into rum and you kind of like the nerdy aspect of it, definitely follow Guardians of Rum. It's kind of a new-ish organization of rum brands that are coming together basically from different islands around the Caribbean. So on our bottle, you'll notice it says single blended rum. That means single distillery. That means it's coming directly from our distillery in Barbados. It's not a third, fourth, fifth party kind of a situation. And then the blend is our two still types I talked about. But there's a lot of single distilleries around the Caribbean, so people who are selling direct, who are realizing the struggle in kind of the rum game of just staying noticed, staying relevant, not having maybe the deep pockets some of the other brands have. So we're kind of talking to each other more these days and kind of just working on finding initiatives to protect traditional, authentic Caribbean rums. So this is basically what this group is all about, is just helping each other anywhere from marketing events to legislation. We actually just got a GI passed for Jamaica, and we have a geographic indication coming next for Barbados, hopefully.
Does that mean that, like, the big names are out there are essentially dumbing down their product?
I'm not going to speak to anyone's products, but the idea is that sometimes there's... This is really about education, right? Because there's a lot that people don't... Rum, I think, admittedly, is a lot of people's sore spot or that they don't maybe know as much as they do about some other categories. So one thing Guardians is doing is a lot of education. And then also kind of, yeah, just differentiating, not to say anything negative about anyone else, but just to bring attention to the producers who have been doing it for generations and who are doing it really well and doing it with, you know, just all of that authenticity and bring... Exactly. And it's really bringing attention to that. And then in the case of some of these islands, protecting things that are actually kind of being threatened. So making sure that, you know, someone can't come in and put a sugarcane vodka on the shelf and call it Jamaican rum if it's not made in Jamaica. Because that stuff happens. The TTB allows a lot of fanciful language, they call it, right? So it's an allowable amount of false marketing. And that's something that we're just kind of trying to educate about. Because it... is a little murky. One more question.
Is there any sort of like legal definitions and terms that end up on rum bottles that are definable versus say like small batch?
You mean something that is fanciful or something that's true?
True and like...
Well, I'll tell you one thing I can say about age statements. So there are two legal lines for age statements because there are a lot of things out there that might have like a 20 plus number that you might wonder, is it really that old? Well, there's a way to find out. There are two legal lines. Aged, number, years old. Any other combination of numbers and words, it's fanciful. So if it says slow aged, trademark, 23. If it says batch number, 21. These are marketing terms. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't even mean a drop is that old. It's not like Solera where maybe part of it is. It doesn't mean anything, which is kind of crazy. So that's one thing you can kind of be armed with if you look at a bottle. And this applies to all spirits. If it says, it has to say one of those two lines to be a legal age statement. Yeah. So, I don't take up all the time. We have two very important brothers to introduce. But thank you very much for your attention. Please come up and talk to me. We can continue this conversation after the presentation. But next, I am going to turn you over to Randy, who is... Wait, Randy the what? Randy the Wrench. Sorry, Randy the Wrench. He is, you've probably heard of him. He's the founder of this thing. It's called Liquid Alchemist.
Oh, hello.
Thank you, Nathan. Guys, what's up? Hey, food guys back there, can you hear me? I talk loud, by the way. I'll talk over you for sure, Benny.
What?
Hi. So check this out. If y'all come in here, I got some eyesore stuff on the screen, and we're going to give away some prizes. So you got to pay attention to this portion. It's very important. Yeah, I know. Come on. If everybody likes t-shirts and pins and stuff, that's what I do. That's how I rope them in. But dude, please do come up. We're going to learn some stuff between Real McCoy, Liquid Alchemist, and CNI brands with Alex over there. But first and foremost, talking guys over there, I have a question for you. Do you know Liquid Alchemist? Come and learn. All right. That's why we're all here. So check this out. I'm very pleased to be here in the Tiki Farm headquarters because Holden started Tiki Farm 19 years ago, as he was telling me, right? And now he's got this big warehouse, and he's showing you his operation about how he runs his business. And this is huge because that's how I started my company 12 years ago in my kitchen, sourcing ingredients from Ralph's and getting bags of sugar from the Chinese market in mass quantities. When people would hit me up on Friday night and be like, hey, dude, can we get like 6 bottles of ginger? I know we forgot to put the order in, but we need it in like 4 hours. Can you do it? So that's how I started my career with Liquid Alchemist. So here we are today. We have 8 awesome flavors. If anybody hasn't tried them, we're going to be serving a few shortly. But I am the founder, and then there's Joe Carlin around here somewhere. Joey, stand up. All right. So Joe covers Orange County and the Inland Empire for Liquid Alchemist syrups. And he's a rock star, and I appreciate it. So we started this Mai Tai Mafia thing. So sorry I'm not in character. I've just been traveling a lot. And it's my mom's birthday today, so give my mother a hand. All right, so... Oh, Mom, could I have those shirts, please, so I can give them away to people? Like my baby birds. Okay, guys. So we're going to ask some questions in a minute about stuff, so let's pay attention. So, Joe, where's the samples for everybody? They're coming out? Okay, cool. So, guys, the first sample of Liquid Alchemist that's coming around, that's coconut syrup. Tamarind's coming around? Tamarind's the brown one, and the white one's coconut, not the other way around. All right. So while you got those, let me just go into the brand really quick. We're going to take about 10 minutes. That's all we need. So Liquid Alchemist, guys, like I said, it was started in my kitchen 12 years ago. As a bartender, in between my shifts, I decided to make syrups because there was nothing else available. So when I was making the syrups, all we had was roses and high fructose corn syrup, artificial flavored color stuff. People were starting to ask for natural ingredients. So I went ahead and I started making things. I started listening to what all my bartender friends were wanting. As an advocate of USBG, I started traveling around making syrups based on what everybody demanded. People wanted grenadine, so I made grenadine. People wanted ginger, so I made ginger, so on and so forth. So the cool part about Liquid Alchemist, guys, is it's natural. And the even better part is it's got great shelf life. So once you open Liquid Alchemist, you can go in and out of the fridge with this product for a few months, which is huge. Because who in here works at a bar? Show of hands. Right? Who hangs out at home and makes cocktails because they love it? Me too. So either way you look at it, it's important to have a syrup that when you buy it, it lasts. Because let's be honest, we all know how to make ginger syrup. Super simple. You juice ginger, put some sugar in it, right? But the problem is in the bar, when that thing sits for a while, it starts going bad. So now we have a syrup where you could buy it and it doesn't go bad and it tastes just like what you can make in-house. What's up? So the process that I use is a flash pasteurization hot bottling method, which bottles very hot, drop in the bottle, chill it really quick, and that pushes the air out. And that's how we get about a 2-year shelf life on that product. Once it's open, you get a few months, like I said, in and out of the fridge. So, guys, syrups. Who here uses syrups to make cocktails in their bar or at home? Show of hands. Who has no idea how the hell a syrup works in a cocktail? It's okay. Yeah, it's all good. Mom, you know, okay. So, truth be told, about 12 years ago, my mother helped me in the kitchen start Liquid Alchemist. I put her to work labeling and bottling and do all that stuff. So she knows this process in and out. But, so guys, I just want to give a crash course on syrups, all right? So I put up the Aunt Jemima pancake because it's not much different. It's a syrup, right? You put it on pancakes. Well, you can put Liquid Alchemist raspberry on pancakes. But the fact is that just like you have a syrup that's Aunt Jemima, you got Liquid Alchemist. The options are two of them, premium or artificial. Water, sugar, and fruit juice for natural premium syrups. What do we make in the bar? We buy it. Option B is water, sugar, corn syrup, artificial flavors and colors. Roses, Aunt Jemima, great products, right? I use Aunt Jemima at home. I don't care. It's all about nostalgia, you know what I mean? And the same as with roses. It's a wonderful product. And it got us through the 70s, 80s, and 90s. But now people are starting to ask for new things, and that's why we're here. So we all know what we're doing here, so we're going to skip that slide. But this is the key, guys. So this one right here, if you could focus on this for a second. So we don't bash brands necessarily, and you'll hear me say every brand has its use and its efficacy. These are great products. But if you want something natural, we now have an option. So where for Tiki, we would do the coconut breakdown where we would scoop out Coco Lopez, put some water and some sugar. Somebody would probably slice themselves in the top of the can at least twice a shift, right? Myself included. Same with this, the Coco Real. Great product as well. But we just have a premium product now that has natural ingredients. So we now have an option. And that's the first one that's in front of you guys. That's the white one. That's the coconut. So please, everybody, give that one a try. You like that? Thank you, Christian. Yeah. This is a very challenging syrup to make. It took me about 3.5 years of R&D to get it right. I got it wrong a lot until I eventually got it right. But what you want here is sugar, coconut cream, and coconut milk. You want the viscosity, you want the body at 3/4 to 1 ounce to hold up in a cocktail, like a painkiller, like a colada, but not be overly sweet. And that's the challenge. And it also goes great in coffee. So what do you think about that one? Cool, I'm glad you dig. So, do we have apple, Joe? We use the apple in the punch, but we didn't get to taste the apple, guys. That's why I put this up here. But just to give you an idea, so some of the stuff that we do with our apple spice, which, by the way, tastes like liquid apple pie, is up here. So we love to do sidecars. We love punches. We love hot toddies. We love old-fashioned variations. So we won't get to taste that, but that's fine. Yes. You take like a Real McCoy 5-year, for example, and put it in a glass just with Liquid Alchemist apple spice. You don't need anything else. It's amazing. You have the tamarind, and do you have any other flavors up there? Grenadine's coming around. Let's just jump into that tamarind really quick. Guys, does everybody know what a tamarind is? Tamarindo? Okay. Popular flavor in Southeast Asian cuisine, Mexican cuisine. They have tamarindo candies, tamarindo puree. Right? It's a very unique flavor. Right? And if you don't know it, it's tart, almost sour. It tastes like a fig or an almond profile. Makes a wicked whiskey sour, a rum sour. Goes great in margaritas, of course, in michelada variations, or just pretty much about anything. But I wanted to show you this slide really quick because a popular syrup that we have is our ginger syrup. And we do a ton of it in Southern California. So a lot of people call us up and be like, hey, man, I want to make a ginger beer with your ginger syrup, and how do I do it? So I got bored one day on an airplane, and I put this little slide together. So it's a little bit of an eyesore. But if you can see, it's got some mathematics on that thing. Yeah, right? So kind of what you look on the top is a cost analysis, and then you look at some fun facts about, you know, why we decide to make natural ginger beer. And then, of course, one really important thing that I like to look at here, is kind of like the value of it. So when you go up to some cities, they ding you based on waste weight. So like what you put out of the back of your restaurant and they pick up, like recycling, they charge you for it by the pound. So for my buddies up in the city, San Francisco, I put this together because it equates like the glass weight, like the amount of ginger beer you would need for cases versus the case of Liquid Alchemist. So just to give you an idea. So for 6 cases of ginger beer, guys, it's under a case of Liquid Alchemist syrup. So that's kind of cool because you can make ginger beer out of it. You can make ginger sodas for mocktails, but you could also make things like penicillins and Buck variations. So that's pretty sweet. Any questions on that? I didn't think so. Yeah, oh yeah. I like how everybody's listening. So tasted the tamarind, tasted the coconut. We're not tasting apple. I think we have grenadine coming around. Okay. So in the interim, we're going to give away some stuff. So first hand up gets a t-shirt. That doesn't count. You have to ask the question. Okay, so Real McCoy Rum, right? Real McCoy Rum has 4 age statements. Somebody name 3 of them. You're first. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, I just didn't see which hand went up.
It's correct. Okay, cool. Give that man a shirt, please, Alex. Yeah. We're getting everybody in here. Orgeat. Who knows how to make orgeat and the ingredients that are in it? Christian.
There is orange water. I'm sorry, orange water. There's almond extract. There's, almond extract, ginger beer. There's allspice. And, almond extract. Yeah. And, orange water, almond extract, sugar, water, right? Am I missing anything? Almond?
I think we'll take that. We're going to take 3. I want to see 3 different recipes here, okay? Our friend over here, she was next. Give him a shirt. He wins.
For orgeat?
Make your orgeat recipe.
We are going to use blanched almonds.
Blanched.
Blanched.
Alex, is that correct? Alex is French, by the way. Is that correct? Blanche? Blanche?
Blanche, okay. Almonds. Blanched almonds, sugar, and water. We're some sort of a cheesecloth, too.
Anything else in there?
You guys all know it. Y'all know it.
Can you help her out?
Don't worry. You
got this. What did I miss? Orange flower water. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Same thing.
What's? Could anybody name a variation of orgeat that could be good? You don't count. Anybody?
Pistachio.
That works.
Does anybody here have an almond allergy? Any show of hands. It's okay. And here's the reason why. This is really important for customers when you're serving, guys. So I just want to give you one little piece of advice. This is like the only time I take a warning, is for an orgeat syrup, right? One really good thing to do on the menu, keep this in mind, is if you put the orgeat syrup on there and you're not in a place that you get a very educated bar customer, one really good thing to do that I found is to put almond orgeat or orgeat almond syrup. Little insider tip. Saved me a lot of trouble in the past. Give him a t-shirt, please. Okay, next question, guys. Did anybody get the grenadine yet? Okay, here's a question. How do you make grenadine?
Pomegranate juice, sugar, and orange flower water.
Yeah, that works. Any other variations you could add to that back there?
Pomegranate molasses.
That works. Cool. These 2 guys. Nice. Okay, so we got the grenadine in front of us. Does everybody have it?
I use it every day. I know it tastes like.
Give it, okay, give it a taste. What do you think? Okay, for a prize, what is a cocktail you use with grenadine?
Pick somebody that wears double XL.
I know, it's all we got left.
It's messed up. It's a nice blanket.
The gal right there with the yellow sunglasses.
Tequila sunrise. Tequila sunrise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well done, very well done. That's classic. For another prize, we got other stuff. For a pin, for a Tales of the Cocktail Liquid Alchemist pin. What is another cocktail you can make with grenadine? A classic. Yep, that doesn't count. This guy with the tiki shirt.
Dirty Shirley.
What the hell is that? Isn't that a sex move? What's another one? You were next. Yes.
Rum runner.
Nice. Well done.
With a shirt.
You like that?
Singapore Sling.
What was that?
Singapore Sling.
Nice. We got one more cocktail. We got one more last pin. Last cocktail. You already got something. What do you got back there? What? Hey, here's for creativity, brother. Guys, thank you for paying attention for this 10 minutes. That's all I'm going to talk. Guys, here's our social channels. We absolutely love Instagram, like, obsessively. So if you have anything, please check us out on Instagram. We're doing an awesome apple spice winter cocktail contest. So guys, thank you for your time. Big thank you to USBG for having me here. Thank you to Tiki Farm for allowing me to take up some space and breathe some air. And thank you for you guys for using Liquid Alchemist. I greatly appreciate it.
Can't wait for the
prickly pear and strawberry coming soon. Thank you, guys. Oh, and yes, bitters as well. Thank you. Yeah, bitters. We're launching a chocolate and a spicy bitters. Joe, you're the MC. Like heat, like hot, like ghost pepper, capsicum, and then the other one's going to be chocolate bitters, like a cocoa bomb. It's going to be delightful. Yeah. So, guys, without any further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Alex from CNI Brands.
Thank you, Randy. Hi, everybody. Do you like the syrup? Right? Okay, cool. Thank you. Yeah, all right. So I'm Alex. I'm with CNI Brands. We're the importers of a bunch of cool stuff, including Combier liqueurs from France. So I'm, right, the French connection, that's me. I can speak like that if you want to. I can force it a bit, you know. oh, baguette, yeah. All right, okay. all right, so do you guys know, any of you know about Combier orange liquor already? Yeah, like it, all right. Some fans over there. So basically Combier, you're going to have a little taste coming in a second, is the first ever, I'm going to show you the bottle right now. Boom, here. So it's the first ever orange liquor triple sec in the world. It was created by Jean-Baptiste Combier in the city of Saumur, here in Loire Valley, in the west of France. In eight, what? Ah, c'est vrai? The Saumur, ben voilà, Saumur connection. So he was a candy maker at first. See, like everybody makes syrups, candies. And one day he created an orange liqueur to put in his chocolate. And everybody around him was like, oh, wow, this is good. Like, can I get just some of the juice, please? So he's like, all right, see what's going on. So he gave up with the candies, and he started his own distillery. And this is the distillery here. It's beautiful. It was designed and built in 1850 by Gustave Eiffel, the same guy who made the Eiffel Tower. So maybe you can tell with the iron work, the crosses. So this is the distillery, and this is the only facility of every single Combier liqueur since then. So Combier, the orange liqueur here, as I was saying, is the first ever orange liqueur triple sec in the world. Why? Because Combier, at the time, as a candy maker, every time he would find something new, some cool like ingredients, he would try to come up with a recipe, right? And one day he found this guy, these orange, bitter orange peels here. I actually have a few here. If you mind passing them. Thank you. So these here are the bitter orange peels that are used to give all the flavor to the orange liqueur. So if you break them, once you have them, break them and smell them. Some are a bit like, you know, a bit harder than others. Can you guys smell the flavor, right? So right, so all the flavor that's in the orange liqueur comes from this. It's from the essence that's still trapped in the skin. So the process today is exactly the same as it was in 1834. We still receive the orange peels like this. They're naturally dried in the sun in Haiti. Once we receive them, we soak them in water so they get soft enough we can get rid of the pith, which is a bit too bitter. And then it's going to be macerated, and the base spirit is sugar beets neutral alcohol. That's how most of French liqueurs are made, because there's a lot of beets, sugar beets in France, not so much cane. That's how we do. Once it's macerated, it's going to be distilled 3 times in those copper stills. And that's actually how Combier invented the term triple sec. Right? Yeah. So.
Wait, when you say that again, why is it called triple sec?
It's called triple sec? Why? Because of the triple distillation. Triple distillation. So he invented that term at the time. No, it's not. That's what happened. That's why now when you hear like, oh, triple sec, like cheap stuff, whatever, artificially flavored orange liquor. It's because at the time when he created it, we're still like in 1834. There's no copyright. Like, who cares, right? So everybody started to copy the name. It's like, oh, it's a triple sec, whatever. But like, it's not. So we don't even use it anymore in the bottles or anything because we don't want people to get confused. But it's always interesting to remind the story, right? This is where it all comes from. This is the first ever. Even before another popular orange liqueur brand, this was 40 years before that brand that also starts with a C.
Yeah.
Who tried to copy Combi at the time? They're from a city an hour away. Anyways. and here, even the bottle. Yeah, because actually here, I have a few postcards here if you guys want. This is the old bottle of, I mean, if you want to pass it, I don't know, but I have a bunch on the table here. Yeah, right. And it does say triple sec on it at the time because this is the old bottle, right? But don't hesitate to come here. I have a bunch of postcards and stuff. So did you try it yet?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. So what do you think? All right? Yeah, in the back? Better? Yeah, all right. I'll take that. I mean, it is for, honestly, 99% of people, it is better. So what's important to remember there, it's that it is the original recipe. It is 100% natural. We get rid of the pith because it is too bitter, like other brands don't do that. It's actually handmade. That part when we get rid of the bitter, just someone, there's a table with a hole and 2 wheels, and it's someone sitting there and doing this one by one, peel after peel. And it separates from the pith, yeah, from the skin. So yeah, it's super artisanal. This is the, as I was telling you, this is this distillery, this is the only facility. Everything comes from that same room still. So you can imagine, like, old school. The stills are very particular as well, with the swan neck. I think the only two other places where you can find that specific type of still is Chartreuse and Benedictine. So we're talking about old school. So I don't know if you have any questions about Combier, the orange liqueur, at all. No?
How they're able to triple distill it and still maintain the flavor of the orange without it being stripped away?
Well, that's, I guess, should ask the master distiller. But but yeah, it's always been like a secret. I mean, it's, yeah. Yes. Yes, we do. Yeah. And there's a long history of absinthe also with Combier at the time. Actually, the Zombie had some Combier absinthe because that's brand new to California about a month ago. It's an old recipe from 1899 because, you know, absinthe was prohibited for about 100 years, just got back like back 10 years ago. Yeah, well, the wine industry, you know the story. All right. And then, just so you know, we have a bunch of other products beside the orange liqueur. There's a bunch of... there's a bunch of fruit liqueurs here. Grapefruit, peach, apricot, raspberry, etc. So they're all natural. We have a rose liqueur, really awesome. And fun fact, my mother is from Saumur, actually. And when I was younger, it was my summer job to work in the rose fields. over there, because it's really famous for roses around Saumur and Douai-la-Fontaine, you might probably know. So yeah, that's fun. And these are all the, and then we have a more herbal liqueurs. The Royal Colombier here, I have some here if you guys want to try. It's a blend of the orange liqueur and the elixir, which is an herbal liqueur, plus VSOP cognac, so it's going to be more of an elevated, like orange liqueur, kind of a bitter version of another brand of liqueur, GM. We have some cherry liqueur. This is the Cumel. I don't know if you guys have seen it before. It's a liqueur made with cumin, caraway seed, and fennel, so really cool, like really savory. This is a really like, fun one for tiki's. This is the only not 100% natural product, as you can imagine. But it's the base is the same orange liqueur we just blew in it. So 80 proof, all awesome. Like basically probably the best blue curacao there. We came up with this last year because we had a bunch of friends working at tiki bars and asking us 4 years, hey guys, when are you going to come up with, you know, something? Like all blue curacaos are shit. We're like, so they would actually buy the orange liqueur and date themselves. And then we just like came up with this last year. So if you want to have like good blue curacao, like there we go. And this is the absinthe I was just mentioning. The Combier de Blanchette, it's a white absinthe, Swiss style. Really cool, 60% though, so careful. So the rouge is gonna be more dry and light, like not viscous at all. It's actually an old recipe that was created by the nuns of Saumur in 1632. It's a blend of two types of cherries, Morello cherry and Guignan, which is a tiny cherry specific from Loire Valley. So that brings it more of like earthy profile, lighter, 17%. So it's called Guignolet in Loire Valley. It's a really traditional aperitif that you would just drink on the rocks. I have some in the car. Meet me in the lot. So, yeah, that's about it for Combier. I don't know if you have any question about some of these liqueurs, the history or anything. No, we're good. I don't know if you poured the second. Okay, so now there's a little surprise for you guys. I don't even have a slide for it. But what's, yeah, no. So the next one is going to be a mezcal. So we're outside of the Mai Tai because the last drink is going to have some mezcal, and this is the mezcal that you're going to taste on its own. It's called Banhez. That's it. Have you ever tried it? This mezcal, Banhez? No. Have you seen it, tried it? Banhez? All right. So this mezcal is really cool because it's produced by a co-op of small producers in the village of San Miguel y Jutla, so it's in the south of Oaxaca. As a co-op, that means all those guys, they started a few years ago, they were like, what, 8 mezcaleros? Now it's about 36 families working together. So it's 25 palenques, but also farmers, nurseries, and people working at the bottling plant. All coming from around the village of San Miguel y Jutla. So those guys, being part of the co-op, they all have their own share of it. They also co-own the brand, so it's probably the only mezcal that's totally owned by the farmers. I work for the importer. We're just here to show it around, spread the love. It's really amazing. The story behind it, they also, it's really sustainable. They replant right now about 2.8 plants of agave for one that they use. Bat-friendly, there's a bunch of bat houses around the field. So basically what happened is that those guys, they all have their own small palenque, make their own juice, then they meet at the co-op to blend and bottle the juice, they can all grow together. So, and in each bottle, there is a little percentage of each mezcalero. So the blend, so it's not gonna be, oh, today we're gonna use this guy's espadín, whatever. No, this a little percentage of each producer in each bottle. And how they keep it consistent, because what happened is that they created at the bowling plant, at the co-op, mezcal library, where there is one guy, every time there is a mezcal ready from a mezcalero, he was going to go with a truck, pick it up, and put it like, oh, this is Paolo's mezcal. This is, so they all have their own shelf of mezcal, basically, of you know, containers and mezcal. And every time there's a new batch, a new blend, There's three people actually making sure that the blend is always going to be consistent. They're going to compare the new one to the previous one. And if there is a lack of acidity or this or that, they will pick the right batch, the right mezcalero, with the right profile flavor to incorporate it in the blend to make sure it's always going to be the same. So it is pretty unique, pretty amazing that all those guys are literally in this bottle. I mean, not literally, but it's really awesome. And the juice itself is a blend of two varieties of agave. It's espadin and baril. So I don't, you probably all know espadin, right? Yeah, it's the most common agave. It takes up to like around 8 years to grow, very easy to cultivate and everything. So that's the most common agave that you see in mezcal when you go to a bar and everything. But here we also have 10% of baril. Baril is a semi-wild agave that takes up to 12 years to grow, so it's more rare. There is a bunch in Ejutla. So that's what makes it really awesome. It's have you had it yet or no? No?
Yeah,
is
it? Everybody got it.
Ah, okay, cool. Tell me if you agree with me or not, but I would say it's amazing because it is smoky, but not too much. It doesn't take over the flavor of the agave. You can really taste it. And the baril really will bring that vegetal profile to it. So it makes it easy to sip on, a great introduction to mezcal, but also amazing for cocktails. That's Banez, guys. I don't know if you have any question about it, about the co-op, the process, anything. So this is our like main one, but we do have single expressions as well. I didn't bring any. I mean, I have some in the car, but we have a bunch of wild agaves as well. So we have a Cuiche, Tobala, Roqueño, Tempestate, and Pechuga. No, these are single producers though. They're not blends. The only blend between different mezcaleros is going to be the ensemble, which means blend, actually. But these are like all single producers. So, I don't know if... we use Pechuga de Pavo. It's turkey. Turkey hanging for the last distillation. And in the juice, we're going to have... pineapple, plantain, crab apple, cherries, and guava. So it's super tropical pechuga. It's pretty awesome. Maybe if you're lucky, I'll grab a bottle in my car. Meet me in the lot. All right, so I don't know if you have any more questions about Banez, about Combier, about Real McCoy, Liquid Alchemist. No, about the Mai Tai Mafia. Because this is why we're... try to look like, you know, Italian. I mean, I know it's weird, I'm French, but it's, my parents would just like beat me for that. All right, well, thank you guys for being here. It's really great, we're having a great time. And don't hesitate to come see us. We have a table, bunch of things for you to try and to live with, so enjoy.
Thank you.
And Mai Tai Mafia.
And there you have it, the Mai Tai Mafia. I'd like to thank Nathan Hazard, Alexander Shane, and Joe Carlin of the Mai Tai Mafia for sponsoring this event and providing all the rum, liqueurs, and mixers to make our cocktails possible that night and for the cool swag they gifted to me. I'd also like to thank Benny at the OC-USBG for allowing us to record this very special event. And last but not least, I'd like to thank Holden Westland at Tiki Farm for the souvenir event mug, as well as hosting all of us for this event. Thanks for listening, everyone. Until next time, cheers and aloha.